Last year, during our January news roundup, WBOI Presents spent time talking with those involved with the Women's March. This year, we are speaking with those involved with the local March for Life.
2019 marked the 46th anniversary of the Supreme Court Roe v. Wade decision that gave America legal access to abortion. The summer of 2018 brought developments likely to impact that access, from the appointment of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh to the decision of Planned Parenthood of Indiana to close their Fort Wayne office. Fort Wayne has not been home to an abortion clinic since 2014. The Planned Parenthood Center did not perform abortions, but rather cancer screenings, contraception, and breast and testicular exams, among other medical services. I spoke with Justin Aquila, the director of campus ministry at the University of St. Francis and a board member of Allen County Right to Life, about the march and current issues. I am here in the studio with Justin Aquila. You work in campus ministries at the University at St. Francis. Tell me a little bit about what you do.
Sure. We're responsible for caring for the spiritual needs of the students of the University of St. Francis. So that ranges anywhere from, you know, worship to pastoral counseling and care.
And January is Right to Life Month in the anti-abortion community, pro-life community. And Allen County had its annual March for Life.
Saturday, the 26th of January.
So tell me a little bit about the march and a little bit about some of the issues discussed at the march, and we'll just kind of go from there.
Sure. The march is an annual event that is usually scheduled around the anniversary of the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, which was 46 years ago now. And so the local march, which organizers estimate about 2,000 people attended, was preceded by a rally at the University of St. Francis Performing Arts Center, and then preceded a march down to the local federal courthouse downtown. And the focus this year was really twofold. One was to really talk about renewing the pro-life movement and its commitment, especially in Allen County, which is now, according to the pro-choice side, they call it an abortion desert, which means there's no abortion providers here in the county. So just what does the pro-life movement look like in a county that doesn't provide abortion services? And then secondly, also, especially in Indiana, enforcement of the existing legislation that's meant to, within the context of Roe v. Wade, regulate abortions, make sure they're safe and women have informed consent and things like that.
One of the pictures I saw from the March for Life in D.C., which was a couple weeks earlier, was, "I'm pro-life," and it said, "Pro-life in the womb, at the border, and in front of you." And that struck me a little bit because there seems to be this kind of dichotomy between being anti-abortion and also anti-immigrant, anti-refugee, anti-poverty relief, etc. Mm-hmm. How do you, as a campus pastor, balance that or articulate that, get around that dichotomy?
Sure. I'm going to speak here from the Catholic tradition, which is, and its social teaching has always emphasized the dignity of human life from the moment of conception through natural death and all the stages along. So, particularly from a Catholic perspective, and I understand not everyone in the pro-life movement is Catholic, and so there's a wide range of opinions and thoughts on this, but we do invest ourselves in caring for the woman who has made the choice to keep life. We want to encourage that choice and support along the way. And I think one of the, maybe if the two myths, if you could say that, about the pro-life movement, I think it's one of the most generous movements that I've been a part of in terms of starting things like women's care centers and places like here in Fort Wayne, A Mother's Hope, which support women along the way. The other myth is that the pro-life movement is monolithic in its way of thinking and its strategy and approach. The Atlantic actually did a really interesting group about what does it look like to be a secular pro-life person at the March for Life? And that article really highlighted that there are people from different walks of life, different religious traditions or no religious tradition at all who are invested in this movement. So that whether that's Democrats for Life or Feminists for Life or regardless, so not everyone fits neatly into the political camps in the pro-life movement.
You brought up women's healthcare centers that are pro-life, and one of the arguments against those centers and for places like Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers, for lack of a better term, is that they provide medical assistance well beyond access to abortion or birth control. Some of those other organizations that anti-abortion, pro-life people tout as being an alternative do not provide that care. As someone who's been involved in that movement, how do you speak to that, and how does the pro-life movement, now that Allen County is this kind of desert for low-income access to some health care, not just abortion, how should the pro-life movement address that?
I think that's the million-dollar question that has to be thought through a little bit more. So the pro-life movement is trying to set up alternatives, and obviously it hasn't done it perfectly everywhere, but it is really striving to present alternatives to what is provided by abortion providers like Planned Parenthood, and do so in a way that's consistent with its own values.
Is there anything you want people to understand about the March for Life that they might not understand? Things that kind of get lost in the screaming or in the stereotypes?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things about the local March for Life, the one here in Allen County, is that it was just incredibly joyful and peaceful. It's not a long walk, but people brave the cold. There was a lot of hugging and catching up with friends, and just a very peaceful walk through the city. I think the March for Life in D.C., there's a lot of resentment probably from the pro-life side about it not being receiving the same amount of coverage from as say like the Women's March or something like that, and that tends to, I think, fuel some of the cultural resentments in the movement, and sometimes shape the way that event, the March for Life in D.C., is talked about. But I haven't been in several years to the Washington March. But in the past, when I went as a young person, it was always when there wasn't so much obsession about news coverage, maybe with the rise of cable news, then it was really just a joyful event that really showed, I think, again, the diversity of thought within the pro-life movement. And I'll leave with one example. I remember even one time seeing a sign, ex-cons for life, right? and that was eye-opening to me that it wasn't just one group of thought.
Do you think the instant culture, the instant expression culture that we have, makes dialogue on these issues more difficult?
Definitely. I think it's a real challenge to find the forums to think through these issues on things like social media and also just the lenses with which stories are covered. Sometimes they're meant to confirm our biases. They're meant to, feed us the narratives that we're inclined to believe already. I think that on the flip side, though, I think things like podcasts or YouTube have provided longer form options to have some really good conversations among people of different, whether it's on this issue or any other issue. So I think there's pros and cons, but because so many people consume the instant social media, that can be a challenge.
Justin, I think that's a great place to end our conversation. Thank you so much for coming by WBY Presents.
Thanks so much for having me.